Measured by national championships, wins, and certainly by salary, Nick Saban is today's most successful college football coach. He has been celebrated, even idolized, by fans of the schools where he has coached, at least until he has left, and then he has been reviled. In Saban, The Making of a Coach, Monty Burke writes about the man to whom success has been so unsatisfying that after his team won the national championship, he called an old friend to ask, "Why don't I feel happy?" Monty Burke, welcome to Only a Game.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's start with that phone call after LSU, coached by Nick Saban, won the 2003 national championship. What does that question, "Why don't I feel happy," tell you about Nick Saban?
I think it says everything about him. It's a cliche, but he's a man who enjoys the journey and not necessarily the destination. You know, he appears, when we watch him on television or we see him in a press conference, he appears to be a very unhappy man. He gets red-faced. He yells at his players. He is demeaning to reporters. But he is very happy, actually, when he is deeply involved in the minutiae of running a football program, whether that's managing his assistant coaches or his players or watching that 10th hour of recruiting tape. I mean, that is what really makes him very happy.
Saban's story starts perhaps with his father, who apparently was never satisfied with anything anybody was doing. At least that's the way I read it.
There's a caricature of the 1950s, 1960s father as being kind of overbearing and unrelenting. And in the words of Terry Saban, Nick's wife, you know, Big Nick, as he was called, was 100 times that. He never was satisfied with any effort his son gave. And his son was a good kid. He was a National Honor Society kid. He played sports. He did pretty much everything right, but he could never please his father. His father really demanded, I guess, an impossible perfection from his son. His father also happened to be his first football coach. And Nick Saban would throw a touchdown and he'd run over to the sideline, and his father wouldn't say, "Congratulations," or "Good pass." He would say, "You know, that spiral is a little bit wobbly and your footwork was all messed up." And I think, to me, one of the more revealing quotes in the book is from one of Nick Saban's best childhood friends. And he said, you know, because of that pressure that his father put on him, you know, I really thought this kid was either going to go crazy or become a great success. And I think the reason that the latter happened is because he sort of learned how to adapt his behavior and not worry about, you know, how to please his father, how to reach that impossible perfection. He learned to embrace and love the steps taken in pursuit of that, which to a certain degree he's done on a bigger level everywhere he's coached. That's his sort of philosophy. That's what's now known as the process.
Nick Saban characterizes himself as a great recruiter rather than a great football strategist. Besides the history of coaching winners and getting guys into the National Football League, what has Nick Saban got that other college coaches lack when he goes to visit a potential recruit?
Believe it or not, it's a sort of warmth and genuineness. Again, this plays against the sort of public portrayal of this man, where he seems angry all the time. And yet when he shows up in these living rooms with these recruits and their families, he is warm. He is genial. He cracks jokes. But he's also all business. He goes in and says, "Here's my plan. Here's our plan. And here's how you fit into it. And, you know, jump on the train or get run over by it later on down the road." Another thing I think that separates him is the homework he does on these recruits and their families. I mean, he talks to everybody, talks to their teammates, their coaches, their aunts, their uncles. One former assistant coach of Saban's told me that one time they went into a recruit's living room and he knew which brand of chewing gum this recruit chewed. So I think these recruits are impressed that this man who is so famous now has spent this much time paying attention to them.
Popular as Nick Saban has been at Michigan State and then at LSU and now at Alabama for the most part, he has not been highly regarded by a lot of coaches at other schools. Some of them have referred to him, in fact, as Satan rather than Saban. Or was that just sort of the kind of kidding that millionaire coaches like to run on each other?
These coaches who, you know, speak out against him to a certain degree are sick of being out-recruited by him and to a certain degree are sick of being whooped on the field by him. But I also think there's this sort of black cloud that comes along with Saban, and in large part because of his demeanor, but also because of how he's left different schools. So he's a little bit of an easy target sometimes for these other coaches. And his name, of course, lends itself to to that slur in particular.
Right. If his name was Nick Jones, they couldn't run that
right.
Satan thing
exactly.
On him. Absolutely. As we've mentioned, Nick Saban has moved around a fair amount. Has the attraction to leave one university for another or for a job in the NFL always been about money?
The money helps, but the money is almost a measuring stick. To Saban, the reasons that he's left have been, A, that they've been better opportunities for the most part, but B, probably more importantly, he feels underappreciated. He gets to a point where he's almost a victim of his own success, where the expectations of the fan base and the alumni become a little overbearing to him, and he starts to feel, underappreciated. And I think that's usually what kind of gets the itch going again for him.
I need to get back to money again because this looms over the entire career of Nick Saban and, of course, the world of college football. You point out in the book, Saban makes roughly 70 times as much money each year as the governor of Alabama makes. No wonder Alabama fans expect them to go undefeated every year.
That's true. It's true. I mean, that's part of the vitriol that you hear after they lose. When they lose to Mississippi, you hear people calling for his head. And you know what? He's the highest paid coach in the country. He's expected not to lose, frankly. What's another interesting part about the money, too, is how much these college coaches can make for their universities. I had one Alabama trustee go on the record and tell me that he thought Nick Saban was perhaps way underpaid. Underpaid is what he said. And the reason for that is the amount of money that a good college program and a coach that coaches that good college program that wins national championships, how it can energize fans and alumni and give them, you know, when they're energized, what they do is they pull out their checkbooks.
In response to your book, Nick Saban has said, "I'm opposed to an unauthorized biography for anybody. I think there's some person that you don't even know trying to profit by your story or someone else's story." What is your response to that?
There is a utility to books like this. His autobiography, I think, will be great. And I actually say this in all sincerity. I can't wait to read it. However, to do it this way, too, to do a biography that done without the permission of its source, frankly, is done all the time in journalism. Journalism is not done by permission. But also, it serves its own purpose. There are many, many, many stories, both flattering and unflattering, in there that Nick Saban won't have in his own autobiography. He just can't. To me, one of the most illuminating quotes in the book comes from the president of Michigan State, when he talked about how every year they had to go to the Saban's house and kind of talk to them about, you know, different job offers that Nick may have had during the season, or you know, whether Nick wanted to raise. And, you know, he said to me, he said, "I just always wondered, why can't he be happy?" To a certain degree, that is the driving force behind Nick Saban, is this pursuit of the elusive state of happiness.
Monty Burke is the author of Saban, The Making of a Coach, and he joined me from NPR New York. Monty, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill.